Good evening. Good to see everyone that made it out here tonight. We have visitors in our number tonight. We welcome you to our class. We've been in a study on worldliness, and tonight we'll pick up where we left off on Sunday talking about dress. We're on page 24 of the handout for our visitors and for our class members. Okay, before we begin talking where we left off on Sunday, we normally do our review. So we'll go ahead and do our review. We're going to do some questions on dress. Actually, I forgot to put the questions in on dress that we've covered on Sunday. So if you're looking for questions on dress, you won't find them there. I'll make those things available later on. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and go through these questions. The first one actually is a question we had when we started talking about idolatry. We didn't cover this question on Sunday. We talked about, in our previous lesson, we were talking about idolatry. And we talked about different idols of today. And we had question number 69 covering that. And if you remember, we went through these things and talked each about them. And I'm not so sure that these are all the idols, but some things to think about. We have technology, entertainment and hobbies. Self can become an idol. Our prosperity, popularity, physical beauty, knowledge, science, and power. So that was question number 69. So let's cover these questions here. What I'm going to do is really use these questions as a review. So question number 98, we talked about these, and we'll go over them in class. So how did Adam and Eve feel about being naked before their sin? We have in Genesis 2:24 talked about that. Before their sin, it says the scripture says they were naked. And then it goes on and says that they were not ashamed. So I asked the question, did Adam and Eve know they were naked? Well, not in the sense that we know nakedness because we would feel ashamed. They were naked, but the scripture says they were not ashamed. And this was all before their sin. Okay, then they sinned. And the next question here, number 99, how did Adam and Eve feel about being naked after the sin and what did they do? And as we talked about that, now we have a change of attitude. As we talked about on Sunday, they felt ashamed, and they did something about it. They were naked, so what they did is they made clothes out of fig leaves. And when they covered themselves, so the scripture says they only covered their loin, their loin coverings. We talked about the loin. The loin's the midsection from the bottom of the rib and the rib cage down to the bottom of the hip. So it's pretty obvious to us that that would not be proper clothing, but that's what they clothe themselves with. I didn't mention this on Sunday here, and I didn't get any questions on that. Let me look at if you have in your notes here when we talked about that scripture was in Genesis 3:7. 2:25, we talked about they were naked, they were not ashamed. Verse 37, now they knew they were naked and they made fig leaves. The first part of verse 7 says, and the eyes of both of them were opened. Interesting, I didn't get any questions about that. What does that mean? The eyes of both of them were now open. Let me suggest a meaning, and I'll open up to class if anyone has any other thoughts about what that means. When we look at Adam and Eve before their sin and after the sin, before their sin, they were free moral agents. It was clear, right? God is holding them accountable. So they were free moral agents. They had a choice, and they made some choices. Okay? And then, so they were free moral agents before their sin. They were free moral agents after their sin. So their free agencies really did not change. So they were both free agents. Here's some handouts. Page 24. So that didn't change. The next thing about before and after their sin, they understood God's will. God held them accountable, right? Because he punished them. So that didn't change after their sin. But something changed, right? It says the eyes of them were opened. So what does that mean? They had knowledge. They were free moral agents. But something changed, right? And we know that before they were not ashamed, now they're not. Now they are ashamed. Let me suggest this as what this means, and the eyes of them were open. Their nakedness. So now they're naked and they feel ashamed. Let me suggest what this is saying. Their eyes were open. They now understood that they could take something. Now, nakedness in and by itself, if you're, you know, getting ready, you know, and in the bathroom and getting ready to take a shower, you're naked. You don't feel ashamed, right? You know, no problem with that. When you get among people, then you have this this being ashamed. Let me suggest what happened before and after the sin is they now recognize they could take something not necessarily evil of itself, nakedness, and see the potential evil of it, how it could be naked or being, you know, some sin associated with that. So their eyes were opened in that regard. They saw how they could take something not necessarily evil, but make it evil. And this principle is something that we know today, right? There are a lot of good things. You know, like you can take, for example, the internet, something really good things. But people taking the good things and turn it into something that evil, you know, using it for evil purposes like pornographic and things like that. So think about that. You know, something changed. And so, you know, they were naked before, didn't bother them. Now they were naked. So now I'm suggesting that they saw that their nakedness would be do something to be turned into evil. And, of course, they acted upon that. They were ashamed. Think about that as a thought. It's a complicated thing about what happened to them, but suggest that for your meaning. Okay, question number 100. So Adam and Eve made some clothes, some fig leaves, covered their loins. Question number 100, were these clothes acceptable to God? And as we talked about that, and the answer is no, right? So we know that they made the clothes. They're walking the garden. They hear God speaking. God talks to Adam and Eve and tells them that, you know, God asked them, why are you this way? He says, well, we're naked. God asked them, well, who told you we're naked? And we know that God made them some clothes here. So these clothes that Adam and Eve made were not acceptable. And it's pretty obvious to us that, you know, what they covered would not be acceptable. So you said, what's all that have to do with us today? What do we learn from all that? And that kind of gets to the next question, number 101. What can we learn from the story about Adam and Eve's clothes? And I suggest to you a couple of things. The first one is God is concerned about what we wear. Definitely, in the case of Adam and Eve, the clothes were not acceptable. And the second thing we can learn is, even though Adam and Eve made themselves some clothes, sometimes man's choices of what to wear may not be acceptable to God. In the case of Adam and Eve, it was not. And we went on to say, well, how do we know what's acceptable to God or not? Well, we have the Scripture, and we have that to help guide us on what's acceptable or not. We're going to cover more of that here tonight. Okay, question number 102. We went through many scriptures here about dress throughout the Bible. And this question covers this thing. So number 102, what various things do clothes communicate about according to scriptures, of all the scriptures that we examine? As we went through those on Sunday, we saw that in the Old Testament, people, when they were in mourning, tore their clothes, so it's a sign of mourning. Joseph, when he's brought out of prison to approach Pharaoh, he changed his dress, indicating that, you know, he's trying to create a good impression upon Pharaoh. Humiliation is another sign that we communicate with our clothes. One that's of particular interest and probably unique to the Old Testament, in the Deuteronomy, we talked about indicate virginity. For those who weren't here, we read a scripture there in Deuteronomy where a woman marries a man, and this man doesn't think she's a virgin and cast him out, and the father comes, and he knows that his daughter is a virgin, and he approaches the elders, and what he does to show her virginity is, we read the scripture, he lays some garments down as evidence to the elders that she was a virgin. We don't know what particular garments they were, but we do have that. So evidently this scripture here showing that in the Old Testament time, something about some of their clothing would indicate virginity. Clothes also indicate harlotry. We talked about this. It talks about how the harlots, they were the person dressed as a harlot. And, of course, this is one area that we are familiar with in terms of how people dress in the world today. And a couple of the things, royalty indicates clothes, and then rich, poor. Let me mention about this rich, poor clothing. We've had here recently, for those who remember, a Joseph was a homeless man, and he was attending services here. And of course, you could tell that he was a poor man, and you talked to him that he lived under the bridges, and he was here. In the scripture we were reading, talking about the rich and poor in James, was talking about showing partiality to people either dressed finely or dressed, very poor. And just a comment, my observation was that the brethren here treated that poor man just like any other person, treated him with respect and tried to assist him and help him. But, you know, we do communicate things with our clothes. So that's where we left off on Sunday, about clothes communicate something to us. Now, we may not think it, right? We dress every day. We put on our clothes. You know, we do this day after day, but we're communicating things. It's just like our example. We have an impact on other people by what we do, the things we say, the places that we go, by example. Evidently, the same thing applies here to clothing. So I asked you for us to think about, what do we communicate with the clothes that we wear? Especially think about this in regards to attending the worship service on Sundays, right? The Lord set aside this day, the first day of the week, to come and remember His death, to worship Him. A special occasion, right? So when we come here on Sunday to worship, you know, our dress is communicating something to us. And hopefully we'll be thinking about it. I think most people think about what they wear when they come here. It's a special occasion, and rightfully so. Now, of course, God is not so concerned about, He's concerned about the heart. But what comes from the heart affects things we do, like dress. And so people that come dressed in suits trying to do their best, they're trying to, show respect. Some people may not have any suits, but they come with, clean pair of jeans, shirt, dressed appropriately because it's a special occasion. So think about that. Our dress does affect. People see our dress, and they're affected by it. And when we talk about dress, it's always, dress is somewhat of a cultural thing, right? We dress certain ways here in the United States and in this society. Dress in other parts of the world are different. And so they're different society norms. So think about that. One thing I would like to share with the class is, what we consider respectful probably has a wide range here in this audience. Some people might think certain dress is more respectful than others. And we need to, as we're going to study here tonight, be conscious of what other people have. We don't want to be in a position of causing someone to stumble because of, what we wear. Many of you know a lady that passed away several years ago, June Hodges. I used to have occasion to bring her to the assemblies. Of course, she was an elderly lady, a lady of faith. And, because of her illness, she spent a whole day getting ready for church. And one thing she would do is put out her clothes. And, of course, for her standpoint, if she came to church and saw ladies not in a dress, she got upset. Maybe you didn't know that, but she would communicate it. And just she thought that a person and ladies should be, wearing dresses and coming here to the assembly and with their best dresses. Now, I'm not in any way saying that not wearing a dress is not appropriate. I'm just saying that in that situation, it bothered her that people not, the women should be wearing dishes. All the point is that, that was affecting her, and we need to be cognizant of that. Okay, so when we talk about dress, we covered this. Why are we talking about this having to do with worldliness? What is our objective here? And our objective here is to improve our alertness and decision-making on dressing modestly and sensibly. Okay, so we're on that page that I mentioned for our visitors, and if you're following along on page 24, we had some scriptures here, and I asked you, our next scripture we're going to look at is 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 9 through 10. It has to do about clothing, some admonitions. And there I asked you to underline how a woman should adorn themselves. Now here in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 9 through 10, we find that these two verses, there is a figure of speech being employed, a not but, starting in the middle of verse 9 and verse 10. But we want to look at before this Hebrew idiom to see what it talks about women. And so I asked you to number underline how a woman should adorn themselves. And you see that there were three things in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9. And if you numbered them, there were three things that were mentioned. One is proper clothing, two, modestly, and three, discreetly. Okay, that all happened before this not but. So we want to look at, you know, what does it mean, proper clothing, modestly, and discreetly? Well, sometimes we can understand words in the Bible by looking at other versions. We can look at lexicons to help us understand the meaning. So if you were to do the look at the different versions, now what you have here in the notebook is the New American Standard Version. So we want to look at these three words, proper, modestly, and discreetly. So here on the overhead, we have the three words there at the top row. And if you look at the other versions, if we just start with the first column, proper, and look at how the other different versions use the word proper. The American Standard has modest, King James, same word, New King James, same. ESV has respectable, and NIV has modestly. And then the second word, dressing modestly, what does that mean? Well, American Standard has shamefastness. Same thing with the King James. New King James has with proprietary. ESV has modestly. And then NIV has decency. So you see some of these versions have different meanings. Some of these words are have, you know, maybe shamefastness doesn't mean a lot to us. Maybe modestly makes more sense, but for us. But now let's look at the third column, discreetly. ASV and King James has sobriety. New King James has moderation. ESV has self-control. And then NIV has proprietary. So that kind of maybe helps somewhat. But then it's usually good to kind of investigate these words further. So if you were to look at the different lexicons, and we'll go first for the word proper. This word in Strong's means orderly. Vines means orderly, well-arranged, decent, modestly. And so when I put all that together, what I understand this word proper means, it means to be respectful relative to social standards. So keep that in mind. What is proper? What's proper, let's say, in the United States may not necessarily be proper in other countries. For example, and I've made mention of this before, people in Nigeria, the women, what's respectful or what's proper in for women to dress in Nigeria is a full-length dress, all the way down to the ankle. Well, of course, the United States, it's, you know, that's not the norm in this particular society. And I think this is what this word means. You know, you dress properly, respectful, but it's relative to social standards. And different societies have different customs. And this next word, modestly. If you look at the word modestly, and Strong's has a sense of shame. Vines has about the same meaning. And what I understand this here, it kind of gets back to what Adam and Eve, it means to dress to avoid impropriety or indecency. So here a woman dressing modestly would not be dressing shamefully, dressing enough to not show any indecency. And just like, what's modest to one person may not be modest to another, so we're going to talk about that here in a moment. And this last word, discreetly, if you look that up, discreetly, Strong's has soundness of mind, finds the same meaning. What I understand this word discreetly mean has to do with exercising sound judgment. So here is, the decision-making part of the process. So women are to do these three things, dress themselves properly, modestly, and discreetly. Now, as we look at the scripture here, it is addressed to women. And I know on occasions in the past when we've had discussions on dress, some of the women will say, well, what about the men? Okay, why, here you got the women. Well, women have mentioned, and I've heard that, some women are also affected how the men dress. And so even though this is addressed to women, we still communicate as men, as we dress, how we dress is also, effect. And so we need also think about that, and even though this here evidently is addressed to women. Okay, we go on here in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 9 through 10, and there was some other questions I asked you about. It says, highlight how a Christian woman's focus should be, or what a Christian woman's focus should be. And what we find there is the answer is verse 10, right? We have this not but, and what follows the but is where the emphasis at. So, yes, there are some guidelines about what women should dress, but here we find the focus. And what is the focus here? We find it's good works. And then we find what is the motivation to do that? Well, women, Christian women, they make a claim to godliness, and by their works of good works shows them, you know, what their motivation is. It's a claim to godliness. Okay. Any questions on that? All right. So let's get to the next part of our lesson here. And again, for our visitors, I mentioned that we were going to go ahead and do this. We've studied under this class about 10 principles about how to determine whether something is right or wrong, 10 principles from the Bible. What we want to do now is go through these 10 principles and ask ourselves about immodest dress. Does immodest dress violate these principles? So what I like to do is go through that. And like I mentioned on Sunday, what I like to do is ask for one or two volunteers and ask you, well, for this principle, does immodest dress violate it? Yes or no? You know, what is the scripture and the words in scripture that is your basis of that? And then make any practical application. Okay, so for the visitors, you haven't know about these 10 principles. As we cover them, they'll be obvious to you as we talk about them. Okay, so we're talking about immodest dress. And I don't want at this point to define what immodest dress is. Just say there is immodest dress. We'll talk about that here about in that a moment. But let's start with this first principle, the first basic one, number one. Any principle thing we do in the Bible, you know, we ask ourselves, is it sinful? You know, we're looking for a commandment or a principle stated that says that this thing is wrong. So immodest dress, is it sinful? Yes or no? And then provide a scripture and maybe make some practical application. So what do you say, immodest dress? Is it sinful? Okay, yes. Okay, that's always easy. Yes or no? You got okay. Now the tough part is, well, let's back it up. What scripture would you use for that? Say again, John.
Verse 19
of what scripture.
Okay,
right. So in Galatians 5. Chapter 5, 17 through 25. We've used this scripture on many occasions. We actually use that to establish is something sinful or not. Why we're using the scripture is it talks about the deeds of the flesh and has a long list of things having to do with the deeds of the flesh. And John mentioned about verse 19. And it starts in verse 19. Now, the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality. Okay, John, you said that it's verse 19. I don't see immodest dress there. In verse 19, where's immodest dress? I don't see that in verse 19.
I don't see it there. What you're just the word you're using, immodest, fits right in with impurity.
Okay, exactly. There's several words there. It starts out with the deeds of the flesh, which are immorality. We talked about immorality. Immorality is any unlawful sex act. Premarital sex, adultery, lesbianism, homosexuality, child molestation. That's immorality. The next word is impurity. We've talked about many times about impurity. Impurity is acts that lead to immorality. So if a person is dressed immodestly, it's an act, putting something on, can that lead to immorality? Of course, we know it does, right? Women dressed immodestly, men looking at her, evil thoughts, and maybe take a little bit further, it can lead to. So that's where we catch immodest dress is sinful. That's from Galatians 5:19. And then you keep on going down to verse 21. Verse 21, you have a catch-all. Notice the catch-all. It goes to this list. Practice such things shall not inherit. So here you have a catch-all, things that are like that. And we also, I didn't mention about sensuality. We're going to have our next lesson is going to be on sensuality. The way I understand what sensuality means in the Bible is unlawful indulgence in sexual pleasures. That's sensuality. And so that could also be covered under immodest dress. Having that type of attitude, dressing, you know, any which way. And so that, I think, is another word. Those two words and the catch-all would cover this point. I asked about practical applications, right? course, it's obvious, right? Why do, and I'm focusing on the women, but same thing to say about the men. You know, why do women dress immodestly? Why are they doing right that, right? They're trying to attract the opposite sex, trying to be sexy and showing more than what they should be showing, okay? You know, they're trying to make an appeal to the opposite sex, right? And those things, according to Scripture, are not right. Okay, so that's, is it sinful? Okay, let's go on now to the next principle. And this one becomes a little bit a little bit more difficult. The second principle we talked about, is it doubtful? Okay, and for our visitors, you don't know where I'm headed to. Once I show the Scriptures, you'll see that. Okay, immodest dress. Does it violate the principle, is it doubtful? Yes or no? Okay, yes. Any particular Scriptures you use to for the basis of that?
Romans 2:15, instead of your conscience, you have thoughts that are alternately accusing or defending your actions.
Okay, very good. There's two Scriptures we could use about is it doubtful. And these two Scriptures really have to do with the conscience. You know, do you violate your conscience? When you see a woman dressed immodestly or vice versa, a woman sees a man dressed immodestly, does it bother your conscience? Are you bothered by that? And these two Scriptures and this principle deals around with that. If it bothers your conscience and you violate your conscience, then it is sin. That's what the last part of verse of Romans 14:23 says. And so, now, in this one, again, we get to what's modest and what's immodest. To some people, it might be one thing, and some to another. For example, this is going to really be affected by our age and how we grew up. Now, if you were to ask me, if I were to answer the question, what is immodest? And if I were addressing talking about a woman's dress, on the length of the dress. Personally, I can tell you what's most immodest to me. If the dress is above the knee, to me that's not immodest. But when it starts getting, you know, several inches above it, then, you know, it starts bothering me. Now, some people, because of their culture, they say, well, no, the dress has to be below the knee. So here you find different degrees. What do you consider immodest or not? So some people, it may not bother the dress being 2 inches above the knee. They might not see that to be immodest. Doesn't bother them. Others, it may. So this particular principle, it kind of contends based on how a particular woman's dressed and what's immodest and what's not immodest. Now, I would say that for the Christian, immodest dress, it should bother the Christian. And if it doesn't, you know, that's why we're having these lessons. Now, when we talk about the length of the dress, and again, you may have your own. If you were to just think in your mind, what's immodest dress to you? How many inches above the knee? Now, you know that in the last several years, it's pretty obvious, right? The dress has continued to come up and up in our society, right? Today, it would not be unusual for actresses or people that are in fashion or in the music industry to have a dress that's in the middle of the thigh. And I don't know how women can sit down, you know, in that position with a dress like that, but very, very common. But you know how it's kept coming up, further up and up. And so what is that? Well, that's worldliness becoming more sensual, and society starting to accept it. Some of the women who are major news anchors, they will have their dress 2 inches above the knee, sit comfortably, you know, having an interview with their legs crossed, and, you know, not a problem. That's not affecting, evidently, a lot of people. Now, This particular principle, though, is, you know, does it violate your conscience? And so that's a good one to think about. And again, it'll probably be different degrees of what violates your conscience or what not. Okay. Yeah. Yes, Wally.
The way you describe this, I'm going to suggest something else for a moment. If I understood you right, what you're describing this is if some lady has dressed too sharp in my view. It bothers my conscience to bother her. No, really not talking about my conscience, it's talking about her conscience. In other words, is it doubtful for her? For me, get to the next point about someone is creating stumbling block. Yeah, it might be creating stumbling block to me. But this has reference, I believe, to the conscience of the individual involved. Is, now, I just had to pull something out of the air. You know, I stand in front of them. If you're talking about women, but there's no question about it. Men respond to sight. That's just a fact. You can argue that. And I guess women do too. Men are 53. So if I were a woman standing in front of a mirror and I have a dress on that is exposing skin, I may look at that and say, now, should I wear that or shouldn't I? I have some questions. I choose to wear it, and I have that lack of confidence to violate this principle. But if I choose to wear it, you don't like it. That's not this principle. I think it's violating another principle, not this principle. Follow?
Okay, yeah, follow. Everyone heard about that. You know, Wally's point, these scriptures really pertain to the person who's doing the dressing, not the one who's looking at her. So, good comment there, Wally. So let's move on to the next one here. You know, so we got a woman dressed immodestly, and the third principle is it a stumbling block? And a lot of these are pretty obvious to us, and the scripture we would use there is one that Jesus used about creating stumbling blocks and about woe to those who do so. And so it, you know, if you cause another one to stumble, you know, that violates the principle. And so does a woman dressed immodestly, you know, affect this principle? And so there we would say that if it's dressed immodestly, however you define immodestly, and, you know, someone's looking upon her, you know, is there a potential stumbling block there? And hopefully we'll see that, yes, it could be. And, of course, we don't want to have those type of stumbling blocks. Okay, and fourth principle. Now, some of these principles, they're not necessarily, they're related, but we're looking at certain scriptures here. Now, this one is kind of obvious. The fourth principle is, does it stir lust? And that was one of the principles. You say, well, isn't that kind of covered under the first one? And to a degree it is, but we have a specific scripture here about stirring up the lust. And the scripture there is Romans chapter 13, verses 13 through 14. And the part we're looking at is the last part. It says, make no provision for the flesh in regard to its lust. So it's pretty obvious that a woman dressed immodestly has the potential of stirring lust. And so this one would also violate it. Okay, let me ask the class on the fifth principle. Fifth principle, does it involve associations that lead to sin? How would you answer that one? Does immodest dress violate this principle? What do you think?
It could.
We had a number of scriptures here about being entangled in associations. And so the question is, the people that are dressing immodestly, what kind of people are they? You know, what is their norms? And very likely, if they're dressing immodestly and intentionally not aware of it, probably don't have the norms that, you know, a Christian should have. So you involve yourself with those type of people, and it is probably. Now, it is possible for a naive Christian to dress immodestly and not know about it. It's possible that, but for the most part, it would violate this principle because of the type of people that would be dressing immodestly. Okay, let's do the sixth principle. Is it honorable? Is immodest dress, is it honorable? Let me bring up the scripture here to say, well, what does this principle have to do? In Romans 12:17, this is for the benefit of visitors, it says, respect what is right in the sight of all men. So this is way beyond, you know, the brethren, the local church, Christians. You know, it's saying, do you respect what is right in the sight of all men? So what about this? Is immodest dress, would it violate this principle? What do you say about this one? Okay, this one is kind of a toss-up. It may or may not. And it all kind of gets back to, well, what is the norm of the people that are that are looking at this immodest dress? So I said yes and no. It may bother some, but there appears to be a large range of acceptability. So, you know, people like I was talking about these actresses and other type of Hollywood people. You know, people look at them, they, well, that dress looks fine, it doesn't bother me. You know, other people, it does. Of course, to me, it's you know, definitely is would not be honorable. And so this one here is just dependent upon what is respectable inside of all. But now, you reach a point when it becomes so, you know, there we know nakedness, which definitely would not be respectable inside of all men. And of course, a lot of the dress is starting to approach nakedness, and so this one is kind of, it can go both ways. It depends upon, you know, what all men, what's respectable or not. And again, there's a wide range of acceptability there. Annis?
Maybe in our society, it might get so terribly bad, you know, that we think, well, I'm thinking all men, as far as our society, you know, we would say, oh, no, I wouldn't. But if you look at it, you just think of all men as being everyone on the earth, you know, like a big melting pot, you put it all in a big melting pot, you know, and you say, come out with an average of all the human beings out there and all the societies and how they look on the dress, I think you probably have to say that the majority, the most of the societies everywhere, everyone pretty much sees that our dress is.
It's not the thing. Okay. I mean, yeah, it's possible. Again, it depends upon, you know, this one is kind of a hard one to really say. That's why I put yes or no. Okay, let's do the seventh principle. Have you put Christ first? And we used Matthew chapter 3, chapter 6, verse 33. And would immodest dress violate this principle? And, of course, yes, it would, because, you know, if immodest dress can lead to immorality and stir up lust, you know, violate some of these other principles. You know, here we have the person's soul at stake, and so that's not really putting Christ first. And so it violate that principle. Okay, some of these other last ones, is it an act of love in modest dress? Very similar to the previous principle. I would again say that, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, you're concerned about the soul, and a modest dress can cause damage and in many ways, and so is it an act of love? Would it violate that principle? Say yes. Next one, the last one, let me just go through these last two quickly. Is it lawful? Here we're talking about civil lawfully. And here this one would say, does it violate the principle? You know, there's no laws regulating dress in the United States. And so this one, it would not violate. Is it lawful? There's no civil law against that. Now, there are dress codes and maybe in some schools and workplaces. There might be some local laws, but generally, this one would not, it would not violate this principle. And the last one we had, does it cause you to have a share in what is sinful? And very similar to about the associations, I would say yes, because, you know, the people you're dealing with, the associations that you're involved with, maybe friends that are, you know, dressed in a similar manner, so it would violate this one. So when you go through and you look at all these principles, we talk about immodest dress. You know, we only need to have one principle that violates it. And I asked you at the very end, how many principles does, there's a typo there, should be immodest dress violate? And you could say 9, possibly even 10 if you include dress codes. So again, we need to violate one principle. And so when you look at immodest dress, from many different angles, we find that it is an issue. Yes. Go ahead.
Dressing immodestly, does that simply mean having to do with immorality, impurity, and sensuality? Because in 1 Timothy,
think there's a flashing, you know, where it tells likewise the woman, when it's the woman with the farm clothing, modestly and discreetly, and I was great in hair and gold, pearls, and costly garments. Seems to suggest that if you dress in flashing, not going.
Okay, so Greg is referring to where we were looking at 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9 and 10. We talked about the three parts of admonitions about the women. And then Greg is going on and says, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, but. So he's saying, well, maybe it's not having to do with the sensual part, but having to do with just the showy part because of the braided hair, gold, and pearls. I mentioned earlier that starting in the middle of verse 9, we have a Hebrew idiom, the not but. And so when we have that, so when we interpret this point that Greg is making, we're right in the Hebrew idiom, not but. And as you know, many of know about this Hebrew idiom, is that the truth on this Hebrew idiom and the emphasis of what follows the but. What precedes the but may or may not be true. So when we look at not with braided hair, gold, pearly, or costly garments, it's not, you know, it's a contrast, but it's looking at the focus, what happens after the but, that a woman should adorn themselves, you know, befitting of good works, claiming to godliness. So we really can't say here if it's, I don't think Greg is really talking about flashiness. The modestly, the second word there in verse 9, would deal with the sensuality, you know, dressing decently and without impropriety. You know, if we were to use this last part, not with braided hair, gold, pearls, or costly garments, then if we were to do what Greg was saying, well, then is it wrong for women to wear pearls or to wear dresses that cost a lot? You know, that's what this Hebrew idiom might be suggesting, or this is what the scripture might be suggesting. But again, it's a not but. What follows the but may or may not be true. You can't determine that from there. So the point of all this Hebrew idiom, is what follows the but. You know, the emphasis of women is for good works, befitting women, claiming to godliness. So that's what I would suggest, Greg, on that. That, you know, still, that's what I believe it's, you know, it's not necessarily focusing on the flashiness and the richness of the woman's dress, but... you know, the points that I made. So think about that. Okay, let's go on to the last part of this lesson tonight. And I have there a list of things to efforts to justify immodest dress. And some of these we've covered before in other lessons. It's not immodest to me. So someone will say, well, it's okay because, well, it's really not immodest to me. Number two, it says, I cannot control what someone else is thinking. Okay? Well, that's true. You can't control, but you can influence, right? We can't be a stumbling block to others. We should be concerned of what other people think. And so saying that, you know, number two is it's not a good way to justify immodest dress. Other teenagers dress like this. And again, you know, this is what this class is about. We're not to be of the world. We live in the world. We're not to be of the world. Just because society does it or other teenagers do it or other adults does not justify us doing it. Number four, I dressed like this and I turned out okay. Well, you could justify almost all kinds of sin by that justification. So, again, all these are false reasons to justify immodest dress. Necessary for social acceptance kind of ties in with the one before. Number six, it says, I can't find decent dresses at the store, so you know, that's an effort to try to justify it. And the last one here, other brethren dress like this to justify that. So think about these brethren, and hopefully this lesson's kind of been beneficial to us to help us to think about our dress. Now, I've included an article. I won't cover that article. Hopefully you can have a chance to read it. And so we'll stop here. And so on Sunday, we'll begin our new lesson on sensuality. So if you can go ahead and look over that material and do the markings, I would appreciate it. Well, thank you for your comments and your good attention.